Welcome into the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell staying socially distant away from Scotty Bordelon. And we took our masks. We have not worn them while we were talking here, but we just want to join, I guess, everybody else in the social media sphere and saying, hey, if you haven't liked this long pause without sports, it's probably wise to wear your mask, right, Scotty?
Yeah, wear a mask so we can cover football this fall. You can watch it.
I'm tired of our top 10 list or whatever. We're going to run out of sports eventually to talk about top 10 list.
Man, still got basketball to go.
So if you want some actual content of from not like that we're not giving you actual content, but if you want some actual games to watch and us to be able to talk about those, then we should probably all be wearing masks. I'm just going to throw that out there. I'm sure you've heard it from everybody else. So Scotty and I wanted to join in and say masks are important. Mine has a Mickey Mouse on it, so I'm feeling very spiritual.
Mine doesn't. Where did you get that?
My mother-in-law. She made it for me. We went down to Orlando.
Okay, very cool.
And very spiritual. It was that or Disney princesses, so I decided to go with Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, probably the better of the two options there.
And the NBA is also starting up in the House of Mouse. And if you haven't seen their pictures, I would encourage you to go to the NBA's Twitter and see the pictures that they put out. They're throwing it back to the AAU days where
you
the courts.
And I thought the same exact thing when we saw that picture of the courts just lined side by side.
They're just right on top of each other. I'm going to be interested to see the courts that are in the middle. How does ESPN broadcast those, or TNT or whoever? Because you're not going to have like the high camera and everything. It's not going to be near as far away as it normally set up in a.
I bet there's going to be some unique camera angles. And I mean, I bet they're going to be in there enough to, you know, maybe hang some cameras maybe over the court and give you some, you know, some overhead views, kind of like when you're playing 2K or
it's gonna be interesting
or whatever. Yeah, so that would be pretty neat, I think.
Well, we got a packed Whole Hog Podcast for you today. A lot of things happening for it to be the first week in July, Scotty. The Arkansas Razorbacks basketball team hired a new assistant coach in David Patrick. Sam Pittman, Rakeem Boyd, and Monteric Brown also talked to the media today, so we got some more insight into the football program. Baseball announced that they're coming back, so we've got a series on the best hogs in Major League Baseball. We've also been able to break down the hogs that are on the MLB 60-man roster, which will kind of explain what a 60-man roster or player pool is. And then also Curtis Washington Jr. has decided to transfer. We have where he is going. Lots of stuff going on, but I think that the big news and place that we need to start first here, Scotty, is with David Patrick.
For sure, yeah. I mean, it had been, I think, Chris Crutchfield accepted the head coaching job at East Central Oklahoma in, I think it was at the beginning of June. So it had literally been a month since Eric Musselman's staff at Arkansas was you know, full at full strength. And, you know, we started seeing some people posting on our message boards, like, it's been a month since, you know, since Chris Crutchfield, you know, left Arkansas for that D2 head coaching job. And so, like, when do you think we're going to find out some news on a new assistant coach? And Richard Davenport was just basically telling everybody, he was like, I'm expecting news pretty soon. And then John Rothstein tweeted, citing sources, that, you know, David Patrick who was the head coach at UC Riverside for the last 2 years, was going to be Eric Musselman's associate head coach. And then at about 4:20 on Wednesday, that gets announced. And so, yeah, David Patrick, it looks on paper to be a pretty good hire. I know him and Eric Musselman, they go back, they go back to, I believe, when Eric Musselman was out of coaching. He was doing like some broadcast work. And so I think they kind of struck up a friendship when David Patrick was an assistant at St. Mary's out on the West Coast. So, and then they also worked together side by side at LSU too, so they've got a little bit of a track record together. So one of the things that stuck out to me that Eric said in that Zoom call that we had with him on Wednesday, he was like, you know, there were a lot of guys who he felt were qualified for the job, and like over the last month, like his phone was, you know, he was staying pretty busy on the phone talking to various guys who expressed a lot of interest in the job. And he said that there was probably more interest in the job than he was expecting. But, you know, when it came to David Patrick, you know, and you're looking for a guy to complete your staff and fill that associate head coach role, he thought David Patrick made the most sense. So 44-year-old, he was the head coach at UC Riverside for 2 years. I think he had a losing record there, but the program had won. I think they had a winning season in 2019-20. They won 17 games in the last two seasons before David Patrick got there. The program had won 17 games combined, so he was doing some pretty good things over there.
Yeah, his first year, the UC Riverside was 10-23, and then in his second year, they finished the season 17-15 with a winning record.
Yeah, I think the 17 wins were tied for the most in program history since they got to Division I. So, I mean, that's no small accomplishment. I mean, I think he was, if he'd stayed there, you know, I think he was. That Eric Musselman was pretty confident that he was going to grow that program into something pretty special in the Big West.
This puts two former head coaches on the staff with Eric Musselman and
Corey Williams.
Yeah. So Corey Williams, former head coach at Stetson, and now you also add David Patrick. Do you think this will be a recurring theme with Musselman, that he's going to like head coaches, or is it just kind of worked out that this was a guy that he knew and wanted to fill the position?
I think it's interesting because Richard also wrote a story. He talked to Paul Biancardi, and he told Richard that he thinks that Mus hiring another head coach just kind of tells him how – kind of gives him an idea of how secure Musselman is, that, you know, he wants other minds that have been head coaches and have thought like head coaches before on his staff, because, you know, he's over everything, but he can't really like see every single thing. And so, I mean, it's always nice to have guys that have head coaching experience on your staff. And I mean, you think about Mus, he's got a wealth of experience at basically every level. And then Corey Williams is also another head coach. He was a head coach at Stetson. And then you think about Clay Moser, like he wasn't a head coach in the NBA, but I mean, the Lakers thought enough of him, you know, to keep him around for a while. He played a pretty important role there. So I like the makeup of this staff a lot. And just kind of a sidebar, I'm working on a story on Hayes Myers, the special assistant to Eric Musselman. Hopefully that'll come out next week. But yeah, just kind of getting sidetracked. But I really like the staff. I think, you know, obviously the relationship that he built with David Patrick in the past, and having worked with him, you know, at LSU, he's been at the SEC level before. So, I mean, some of his past stops, I mean, it's not even just the SEC. Like, he was at TCU with Jamie Dixon, I think. So like the hire. He is David Patrick. I can't believe we've talked about him this much. I haven't mentioned this, but he is Ben Simmons' godfather. Mm-hmm. And so he played kind of a, I would say, a pretty critical role in LSU landing Ben Simmons. And, you know, Ben Simmons, you know, after 1 year at LSU, was the number one overall pick in the 2016 draft. So Mus likes his recruiting ties, and he's an assistant with the Australian men's national basketball team too. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not just college experience. Like, he was a scout with the Houston Rockets too. He's got pro experience, college experience as an assistant. He's a head coach, and he's got some international experience too. So looks pretty good on paper.
And he was coaching Matthew Dellavedova and Patty Mills, I believe is what I saw in his bio. So he's got experience, and both of those guys are Australian players. He's got experience recruiting in the down under. So I'm wondering if you can go from the down under to the deep south and continue to bring those players.
Yeah, sounds like he went to the deep south and did pretty well recruiting at LSU.
Exactly. But everything that Musselman has done so far, really since he accepted the head coaching job at the University of Arkansas, on paper has been the right move. You can't necessarily tell right now, because all of his results in recruiting are just on paper, but he has left the fan base re-energized. And on all honesty, there's a buzz and excitement, not even just around Fayetteville or around the state, but nationally, about Eric Musselman and what he has done at the University of Arkansas, a proud basketball program before, as we just saw. If you watched the Eddie documentary that was on ESPN, like, you've seen how Eddie Sutton put Arkansas basketball on the map. Nolan Richardson took it a step farther, but all of those things put together, like, Musselman is just building on that legacy.
Yeah, it would really be a shame if Arkansas doesn't get to play basketball this year. I'm honestly going to be really hurt.
Yeah.
Because this team, I mean, we've talked about it before. We've gone down the roster. And then, I mean, there's the talent upgrade, I feel like, just from top to bottom is crazy. What's the makeup of the roster has changed in just a year. And then you lose your associate head coach who was, you know, helped you gain a footprint in recruiting in like Texas and Oklahoma. And then you add a guy who's got, you know, a wealth of experience, has got great recruiting ties too. There's a lot of people excited.
It's going to be interesting to see, because even if you think about Isaiah Joe was asked, the question was asked to Musselman about Isaiah Joe. And he basically, Eric Musselman said that they've kind of exhausted all resources with him. It's just kind of what he's getting feedback from the professional teams and the NBA and whether or not he's going to come back. But say Isaiah Joe leaves, that still leaves 12 scholarship players. And to get these 12 scholarship players enough minutes is going to be hard. The talent that you have on the roster and keeping everybody happy with the minutes that they are probably going to expect to play and the actual minutes that they do play, that's not an envious position that Eric Musselman has put himself in, but that's the position that you want to be in at the same time. It's something that at the University of Arkansas, they haven't had to deal with in a long, long time.
Oh my gosh, no. I mean, you're thinking last year they played six or seven guys in some games, like max six or seven guys.
Man, how crucial would it have been to be able to have Connor Vanover last year just so that he could play, help the team, but also
anybody else.
Yeah.
But yeah, Eric Musselman has said that, you know, that like the divvying up of the minutes is not going to be up to him. You know, it kind of is, but like it's on the players.
Right.
Like the players who prove to him that they belong on the floor are going to be on the floor. They're going to get the most run. So that in itself is going to be really interesting to follow. You know, if things can return to normal and, you know, they can kind of get down to business in the practice gym.
Thinking about things returning back to normal, the Arkansas football program is trying to get things back to normal. They are back on campus working out, doing voluntary workouts, having some players that are having to sit out if you come from a hotspot area. But we were able to talk to Sam Pittman this week and Rakeem Boyd and Monteric Brown. What were your big takeaways from those three guys, Scotty?
So my main takeaway, I don't want to say, maybe it's not the main takeaway, but one of the things I found interesting after talking with those three guys was Monteric Brown, since he got here, has not been like the most vocal guy, but I think the coaching staff has talked to him plenty, and I think he's kind of taken it upon himself to be more vocal. And you know, I remember last year I think he came into the media room and, you know, maybe wasn't like the greatest interview. I'd probably be the same way if it was like one of my first trips into the media room. You got all those cameras pointing in your face, but he just kind of seems completely different. Like he's matured a little bit, and I think he's finding his voice. And I think that's going to be a big deal for Arkansas secondary. And Rakeem Boyd. Oh, also on Monteric Brown, like I wrote it for Hogs Illustrated, but he's coming back from sports hernia that he told me at first. He first like felt a pop during the Colorado State game last fall, and you know he missed the next week against Texas A&M, but he played basically the rest of the season with that injury, and then in January he had sports hernia surgery, so he's feeling really good again. I'm excited to see, you know, if he can take the next step and maybe become the guy in Arkansas secondary. There's some talented guys back there. You know, like I'm really excited about Jalen Catalan. I think Jalen Catalan and Joe Fouché could have pretty big years at the safety spot, the cornerback spot. I think Monteric Brown probably got one of those corner spots locked down. I think there could be some competition maybe at the other one. But if you start day one, I would probably say that, you know, Jarquez McClellan's probably got the other corner spot locked down, just because. Or I'd say he'd probably start day one at, you know, when Arkansas starts practice, he'd probably be the guy there. But there's going to be some competition at that other corner spot, so that's going to be kind of fun to watch. Rakeem Boyd, I think he's destined for, you know, I think he broke out last year, but I think he could really cement himself as one of the better backs, not only in the conference, but you know, maybe in the country. You know, if Arkansas's offensive line improves how improves as much as we're being told it is, like as far as like the size of the guys. And then, you know, if Brad Davis can kind of really get into those guys and make some improvements there, I think Rakeem can have a really terrific year.
I think that was something that stuck out to me that you wrote about and will be in the link in the description, is the size of the offensive line and how they have gotten bigger. And Pittman's quote about, well, these guys' mamas must have been really good cooks. And the emphasis on getting bigger, which makes sense, switching from Chad Morris as your head coach to Sam Pittman, but at the same time, putting an emphasis on still being able to move. It doesn't do you any good to be a 400-pound cement block on the offensive right. line, because the guys that you're going up against, well, they're the defensive end in the SEC could be 320, 350 and quick. You know, you can run a 4.9, 4.6, 40 or whatever, some of these guys in the SEC. So if you can't move, you're just a slow cement block that the guy has to get around before he goes to the quarterback. So I think that getting big is crucial and helps you be able to match up with defensive ends, but you also have to be quick. And to hear Pittman say that they don't want to sacrifice, they want to get guys bigger, but not sacrifice the speed aspect and the quickness aspect, I think is a good thing.
For sure. And he spoke pretty highly of Myron Cunningham. You know, Myron, I think he played in 11 games last year, started 10. I don't think he played in the season opener last year against Portland State, but every game after that, he at least saw the field a little bit, started 10 times. And, you know, after the winter conditioning, they measure all these guys. He checked in at 6'7", 293. And since then, Sam Pittman said that he's gained almost 30 pounds. Like, he's up to 319, almost 320 pounds. And Sam Pittman said he needed it. So it's pretty neat. Like, you want to see that kind of improvement, you know, physique wise, from a guy, you know, maybe after his first full year at the Division I level after coming from junior college. I think that second year he can really make a big leap, and I'm expecting Myron to play a pretty big role on the offensive line. And what was it that Sam Pittman said? He said that Cunningham needed the weight because he said it's hard to set the bull if you don't have enough butt to set it with.
Yes.
And so he's added almost 30 pounds. So it sounds like he's going to be able to set the bull because he's got enough butt. So
gotta have that big rear end to set to the bull rusher. All right, Scotty, anything else from the football side of things before we move on and talk a little bit about baseball?
I think we're good, man.
All right. Well, before we hit the baseball break, I want to quiz you a little bit. It's time for our daily school of the day. I guess it'd really be school of the week since we only do these once a week.
Yeah.
But I'm having two this week, brought to you by the new assistant coach of the University of Arkansas, David Patrick. He inspired me. So first of all, David Patrick coming from UC Riverside, which UC Riverside is in what conference?
Big West.
And what is their mascot?
Highlanders.
Okay, so that's too easy, though, because you've been doing your research on David Patrick. So.
Thanks, Ken Palm.
That dove me into some Big West schools. Now, don't you dare on that computer. The Big West, this is an educational podcast here right now, has added two new schools to the Big West. They bring them up to 11 members of the Big West on July 1st. They added two new schools. I'm just going to go ahead and guess that you can't guess the two new schools, can you?
I think I know one of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it Tarleton State? Is that one of them?
No.
No? Okay, maybe they're joining the WAC.
I don't know. They're not the Big West. The Big West.
Oh, is one of them Grand Canyon?
No.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know then. I don't know.
CSU Bakersfield.
Yeah, I would have never guessed it. I know CSU Bakersfield played at Arkansas a few years back, but that's about the extent of my knowledge on that program.
And then UC San Diego.
Okay.
UC San Diego, obviously located in San Diego. Bakersfield located in Bakersfield. But both of these teams joined the Big West. You want to take a gander at their mascots?
Bakersfield. Yeah, I don't really even have a guess on either.
Right, I'm going to give you a hint. Ready? Beep, beep.
Oh, the Roadrunners?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The Rowdy the Roadrunner is the CSU Bakersfield mascot. And then the UC San Diego mascot is...
Were they the wave or something?
They're associated with the ocean, which I guess makes sense because of San Diego. King Neptune.
Yeah, that's not helping me at all. Yeah, I'm drawing a blank here.
They're the Tritons.
Tritons, yeah. Never would have guessed it.
Yep.
Yeah, you stumped me this week.
That is your weekly update on Schools of the Week brought to you by David Patrick, coming from the Big West and the two new additions to the Big West.
All of these going to be sponsored by David Patrick moving forward?
No, just that one because he inspired me to go in.
Just whatever inspires your research.
Yes, for sure. Whatever happens, because there is no rhyme or reason to the School of the Week. One week it was because we were talking about J.D. Notae and his Jacksonville team. So we went and talked about Jacksonville. And this week I went out to the West Coast. You never know, we might go to the Heartland next week. We're just going to keep you educated here on the Whole Hog Podcast.
You're definitely going to keep me on my toes too.
All right. By the way, before we move on, there was an NCAA, I think it was like 07, when you were doing your My Player career. Mm-hmm. One of the things was you actually had to go to school and you had to take quote unquote tests for your My Player. And one of them was that you could major in mascots.
I remember that. Yep. I remember me and my cousin, we basically created a player that we could both play with. You know, you'd save your player in your memory card and I would keep it 1 week. He'd keep it the other mm-hmm. week. When I would go over to his place, we would use AskJeeves.com to look up, to like Google some of those mascots so we could ace our test. So we were cheating on online tests before that was a thing, I guess.
Before Quizlet, before any of that.
Yep.
That's funny. Okay. Well, after that aside, let's bring it back into baseball. There's a few baseball stories going on. First of all, Major League Baseball is returning, and Scotty went through and scoured the entire 60-man player pools for baseball and found which former Razorbacks will be on a team this upcoming summer. And basically what the player pools mean is that these are guys that can be pulled from. But the Major League Baseball, whenever they start, which is going to be towards the end of July, they've technically already started spring training, which is now summer training. But they've already started that. So that is happening right now, and they have a 60-man player pool that they can pull from to get it down to like a 35-man roster, and then I believe it'll go down to 30.
30 for opening day.
And then it'll continue to go dwindle down a little bit until you get like 2 weeks into the season, and then they'll have the rest of the players that are in the player pool that'll be getting reps back at what has been deemed like a summer spring training.
Yeah, like an alternate training site. I think that's what they're calling it.
Yes, alternate training site. So what you basically have is the team is supposed to pick a stadium that's within 100 miles of their current stadium. You have to get a waiver. So like St. Louis, they actually got a waiver, and theirs is in Springfield, Missouri. But that's like your spring training base to where all your players are going to go. They're going to get reps. They're going to, you know, scrimmage against each other. They're going to do whatever they can there. And then that's also your player pool that you can pull up in case anybody gets hurt off of your major league team that's traveling and playing at home. But that's how the player pools work. And there were some notable names from the University of Arkansas.
Anybody jump out at you? Maybe a surprise?
Dominic Fletcher from the Diamondbacks being on there that early. And I think Matt Cronin made the Nationals. I'm trying to find the story.
Matt Cronin's with the Nationals. He was actually one of two former Arkansas players in that player pool with the Nationals. You know who the other one was?
That was another surprise, wasn't it? Jackson Rutledge?
Yeah, Jackson Rutledge.
Which, those two guys
transferred.
Kind
of went to San Jacinto?
Yes.
I think that's right.
That was kind of the things that's just going through here. And you got your normal names. So your Andrew Benintendi's, Dallas Keuchel, James McCann. Mm-hmm. You kind of figured those guys will be on there.
Yeah, Jalen Beeks. I expected Jalen Beeks to be on there too.
Smiley made the San Francisco Giants. But Isaiah Campbell being able to part of the 60-man, I think that just kind of means that you're kind of considered a top 60 prospect. And not necessarily prospect because you have, you know, 20 or so guys that are on the team already that aren't really prospects. But you're thought of in the top of this program, which is good to see Brian Anderson still with the Miami Marlins.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty neat that Matt Reynolds is on is on the Royals player pool. I really liked him when he was at Arkansas. He was a dude at third base. Like, talk about a vacuum at third base.
Right.
I mean, I remember watching him take like multiple hot shots off his chest at third and throw guys out, like in the same game, a couple of times at Arkansas. I really liked him. He could swing it pretty well, and you know, his had an awesome glove at third base.
And then, in some other news that we need to get to, referring to the diamond, kind of a fan favorite in Curtis Washington Jr. announced that he was going into the transfer portal, but there were some, I don't know, rumors swirling around that he was just kind of testing the waters to see whether or not he would come back. Well, he is officially leaving. He announced on his Twitter page that he is going to Wabash. Is it Wabash or Wabash?
I'll call it Wabash.
Wabash. Wabash Valley College, junior college in Mount Carmel, Illinois. He's a native of West Memphis, but he entered the portal on May 12th. This is just one of those situations the Razorback fans just aren't used to, and maybe they will. You know, we talked about it a little bit earlier with the basketball program kind of getting there to where they have a problem of an influx of talent coming in and how you're going to divvy up minutes. It's even worse on the baseball side because Dave Van Horn's established this program as a nationally prominent program, and now he has seniors coming back for a year that he wasn't expecting. And with only 11.7 scholarships, what is he supposed to do divvying up scholarships-wise with all these guys? And it was just a situation to where Washington Jr., unfortunately, is just kind of odd man out.
Yeah. I think he was honestly kind of up in the air about even leaving. Like, obviously, you go into the transfer portal, that doesn't necessarily – it's not concrete that you're leaving. You know what I mean? Like, you still have the option of pulling out because, like – Justin Turner, like for a basketball example, like Justin Turner was a guard from Bowling Green who announced that he was going to enter the transfer portal, and he kind of played the recruiting game with the portal, and then he announced that he was coming back to Bowling Green. So Curtis Washington Jr. could have come back to Arkansas, I guess, but I would say it was probably his decision to leave and go to Wabash. And I was looking that program up a little bit last night. Their Twitter page says they've won 40 plus games, 18 in the last 20 years, like that they've played a full season. That's pretty solid.
Yeah.
It's pretty solid junior college. And I think that program was ranked number one in junior college polls. Like when the season ended last year, they were like something like 15-2 or 17-2. So looks like he found a pretty good landing spot.
Yeah. Another example of a guy entering the transfer portal and not leaving, an Arkansas example from the football side, in Devin Bush. Devin mm-hmm. Bush entered the transfer portal and ended up staying. It was in that transition between Morris leaving and Pittman getting mm-hmm. hired.
Yeah, he's another guy that could play a role at cornerback potentially.
For sure. And then we also have our best Razorbacks in the MLB series is coming out. We've hit 10, 9, and 8 will be out on
Friday.
The day that this is released. James McCann is a great catcher, and this is a hard list to make, not to mention the fact that we're writing the series and it's split up between, you know, Scotty, Matt, me, and
Tom and Bob are doing a couple, I think.
Okay, Tom and Bob as well. I couldn't remember who else was on air, but the name that I got ended up not even playing for the University of Arkansas. We had to do a deep dive.
That was an interesting deal, like keeping up with that in the text chain. I had no idea what was happening.
Yes, it was an interesting deal. The fact of he's listed in the media guide as playing at the University of Arkansas, but when we went and dug deep, wasn't there.
Couldn't find him
at all.
Who was it? What was the guy's name?
His
first name was
Ransom.
Ransom.
Handsome Ransom was the book about his life.
Oh, wow.
And so we had to order the book.
Yeah, I remember when Matt told me about that player first time. I was like, just going off of his name, I was like, this dude had to have played in like the 50s.
Ransom Jackson.
Yeah.
And he did. He has an interesting story. I don't know why I blanked on his name, but Ransom Jackson, he went to the University of Arkansas for basically a year, and I guess that's why they assumed that he played baseball when he went, because when he transferred, he went to TCU and started – he was there for military school or something. And while he was there, the coach is like, you need to play baseball. So he starts playing baseball. And then while he's playing baseball, he's walking by the football practice. And the football coach goes, you need to play football. And he goes, okay. So then he starts playing football. And then he transfers from TCU and goes to Texas. And then ends up going and being a... He's from Little Rock, but he ends up going to Chicago, I believe, with the Cubs. I'm not 100% on that. I'm going to go ahead and clarify that, but I'm 90% sure it was the Cubs. And he, all-star, second baseman, infielder, makes the all-star game. It was a pretty interesting story. And the fact of us doing a deep dive on his life and finding out that he never even played for the University of Arkansas. So we replaced him with the story that I wrote earlier that'll be in the link in the description with Andrew Benintendi, which is kind of crazy to think about. A guy that's only played 3 years can crack the top 10 of a best of all time. But Benintendi's had a pretty illustrious career already.
He's had a pretty solid career for sure.
And he's made the highlight plays, comes up just short of winning AL Rookie of the Year in 2017. He only finished second to a guy named Aaron Judge. Maybe you've heard of him.
Yeah, but, I thought you did a pretty cool thing in your story online. You linked it to a couple of the videos, a couple of the better catches that Benintendi's made. It was pretty cool going back and rewatching those. He's a dude.
Exactly. That's a great way to describe him as a dude. And he's going to be expected to take on a bigger leadership role and a bigger role in the lineup this year for the Red Sox after they lost Mookie Betts. I guess they didn't lose him. They traded Mookie Betts. But either way, he's not on the roster anymore for the Red Sox. Benintendi's expected him or another player is expected to be the leadoff hitter, and Benintendi struggled in the leadoff position. I think he hit 120 in leadoff position last year before Betts took over in May, so it'll be interesting to see if he can handle the responsibility of that position a little bit better come the shortened 2020 season, which is also something I didn't put in the story, but is also something to look out for because with it being shortened, Benintendi was on this pattern of he would have a really solid month, and then the next month he would slump. And then the next month he'd have a really solid month. So maybe with a shorter season, he can put it all together.
Yeah.
Scotty, you've got some stories coming up in that series as well. But we don't want to tease it and give it all away. We want to keep you on the edge of your seat just a little bit. But some good stuff coming from Whole Hog Sports. We did this series after we got really good feedback on our best professional football team, top 10 professional Razorbacks in football. So we did it again with baseball.
Probably going to do it again with basketball at some point, maybe later in the month, maybe into August. We'll have to maybe just wait and see on that.
We have to do that. And there haven't been a whole lot of discussions. But before we wrap this podcast up, Scotty, the first name that comes to my mind is Sidney Moncrief. Is that the best Razorback to play in the NBA?
I don't know that there is a better former Razorback to play in the NBA. It's going to be really hard to knock me off of my Joe Johnson perch. I think Joe Johnson had the longest, most successful career, I think, of probably any former Razorback player. So I would say you're probably going to have to wait a while for that story because he's probably going to be pretty high on the list.
It's a very valid point, ISO Joe. All right, well, Scotty, anything else to add?
I don't think so.
All right.
I think I'm good, man.
Well, make sure to check out the links in the description of this podcast. That way you can get more information. You can read the information. You're not just depending on Scotty and I relaying it to you, but you can read it for yourself. All of that information is on wholehogsports.com and also in the links in the description. For all of our writers for Whole Hog Sports, Scotty, Matt, Bob, Tom, Dudley, Richard, I think we mentioned today. Anybody else that's on here?
Dudley's getting better, by the way. Dudley's improving. He sent us a text earlier this morning. Let me pull it up and read it, see if I can find it. So Dudley said that he's basically said he's lost a lot of weight, like in the time that he's, you know, kind of been away from work. He's said he's down from 250 to 223, and he's passed all of his cognizant tests. Progress is going good, so I think he's probably still about a month away from getting back, but you know, at this point all the reports are pretty good, so that's good to hear
for sure. And for all of those guys, we want to wish you a safe holiday, safe 4th of July. Make sure not to shoot fireworks at anybody, They go in the air, not at people. Make sure to wear your mask so that way we can have fall sports. And we will see you back here next week on the Whole Hog Podcast.